Hi, this is Bill with Kosiaba Fitness, and today I have the good fortune to have one of our most popular guests returning to talk about his most recent project, his fifth book, I believe, and his second co-authoring project, a new book called Fat Loss Happens on Monday, and let's just let him talk about it. So, Dan John.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure to have you here, Dan.
Yeah, you know, co-authoring is an interesting process, and it's always going to be different. I'm real proud of this book. I thought years that Josh needed a hardback book. He had a great thing called System 6, and I used System 6. I had an all female weightlifting class. I had two, in fact, at the same time. And to be honest, sometimes it's a struggle as a coach, you know, to ask things. And with Josh's advice, I'll tell you, it's real quick, is that the hardest workout of a week is buying the food and then prepping the food. I guess that's when you should get all your stimulants. That's when you should wear their heavy, you know, listen to the heavy music or heavy rock music and bang your head and, you know, really cut vegetables and whatever it is, you know. And then what I him for was the idea of training with medium intensity a lot more with the female athlete, and it worked out great. So he's had this great book, had some follow-up pieces to it. It was called The Fighter Workout, and then a couple other the rock star stuff he does. But it was like, if you were to get his stuff, there was like this product that was over here and there was this thing that was over there. He's got that fantastic blog. I tell people all the time, it's a rare workshop on that one. I don't tell people to go to his blog. He uses the method called deductive logic when he talks to the female client. You know, if the best, brightest, and most beautiful of what are doing this, you know, you should too. And what they're doing is they're getting extra sleep, they're eating vegetables, and basically they're doing squats. It's just, and that's the same advice that works over and over and over. And after a while, you're going to have to sit back and you're going to think, well, if I want to be in the best shape of my life, I should consider, you know, sleeping more, eating more vegetables, and squatting. And by the way, that's a chapter in the book right there. And so what Laurie and I were talking one day, and Josh was going through kind of an odd transition. And I said to Laurie, I said, listen, I had this book that was kind of a non-start. It was called Reasonableness, and I still love the idea of the book, but it went nowhere. It did not improve on my work called Intervention. It didn't help. It wasn't even a rant. It was a tome, in the old word, you know, T-O-M-E. It was this little, it was like if I was a parson in 1840 and I combined my sermons on Matthew, It kind of had that flavor of a book. So I'd go, oh, isn't it? And you'd shove it on your ship. But there were some things in Reasonableness that really tied in well to what Josh was doing with System 6 and Fire Workout. And all of a sudden, you know, I read it, and I just, you know, Josh had this open. Rhea and I was struggling with this book I was trying to write, and all of a sudden let's co-author a book. If I could argue hard enough for reasonableness and logic and simplicity in my chapters, Josh can give the nuts and bolts, you know, we might have a winner here. And I kind of think we might have. I was shocked at how good the book was. I mean, gosh, that sounds so stupid. For those of you, if you've ever written a master's thesis or something like that, you know, my first one was 92 pages, and you had to type it, and you have three copies, which meant you had to have carbon paper, and it was brutal to get through this thing. Well, by the time it was approved, you hated it so much, you never looked at it again. Well, writing a book is a lot like that. You just, by the time you're done, you're like, I don't ever think about it again. And what's funny about this book is that I'm looking at it going, that's pretty good, you know. Katie's our model for our exercises, and she her technique is great, and Josh's coaching points, and of course his whole parts on habits, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and just builds up, and they're all so simple. It's a book I can stand behind. I don't, unless the human body changes radically in the next 40 years, I can't see any reason to go back to this book, this field, and I'm good with that. I feel that way about one or two other things I've done in my career where, yeah, here you go. This is pretty good. And I got to tell you, pretty good is amazing. Perfect is always in the way of pretty good. I mean, I'd rather have a discus thrower on a pretty good weight program and with pretty good technique, because he's going to throw really far. That search for perfect is going to destroy that poor kid or girl. Yeah. So that's how it kind of happened. And frankly, I thought for sure we would have had it out last year. This isn't a knock on Josh, but Josh decided he had to do it right. And so he did. And the nice thing is, books have errors in it. That's just that's just the nature of, when I was an administrator, you know, we would, when document things, doc and Word and PDFs first came out, what you saw on the computer screen and what printed were never even close to each other. Margins and things like that, it was a nightmare. And so you kind of, after a while, you get used to, like for me, I'm kind of okay with mistakes. I mean, oh, terrible, there's a mistake. But frankly, it happens, you know? So Josh went through and he took care of them. Now, the funny thing is, you know, there's still going to be something. There's always, I get these emails all the time. Dan, I found a mistake in a book. It's like, oh, well, congratulations, because I have a copy of the New American Bible with an error in it. And so I figure after, you know, a couple thousand years that there's still errors in the Bible, I'm okay with one or two in a book that we knocked out in a year, you know. So I'm real pleased with the book. I got it. It's nice because it's like one of those books where, you know, people get back to me, you know, the hardest thing about being a writer right now is this thing called Amazon. The very first day a book comes out, people will review it and give you stars. It's like, how could you have finished a 470-page book? You know, I read every single day a lot. You know, I have a pretty good set of degrees. I'm not a dummy. I can't knock a book out that's 476 pages and have an intelligent review about it. So what's been nice is since the book came out, I'm getting that the people who actually have read the book getting back to me. And a few of them said, you know, I'm not comfortable with putting a review up on Amazon because, and then they'll have these interesting reasons, which I've never heard before. One was fascinating. He said, because I don't want to, you know, I bought the book. I don't want to. I want the readers to buy it too. And I thought for the information. Yeah, I thought that's pretty cool. You know, that's wow. Instead of just, you know, we'll do what we do on the internet now and just send each other the PDF and cut and paste people's work and then call it your own. And I was very impressed with that. So crazy segue, but very proud of the book. I think it's good work. Josh really stepped up on this. I hope this book kind of cracks the door open for him in the business. I consider him the best in what he does. His niche, or niche, as you might say, but his niche is fat loss for women, and there's nobody better. And I don't want to hear about it. Don't send me a name. Josh works with normal women with normal lives, and he gets great results with them. There's, it's not lipo, it's not plastic surgery, it's not harsh drugs. It's realistic things that are attainable. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, if you put me on an island with some famous actress and we had only a certain amount of, you know, we could pre-make food and you could, that's all we eat and 24 hours, you know, the cast of the Tom Hanks diet, you know, we would do some amazing things. But the truth is, if you got a mother of two or three who's got a career, husband and a dog, You know, that's not a good option. Like that idiotic show, Biggest Loser, which has the most offensive title in the history of television, and people applaud it. Sorry, Bill. You want that rant, or do you want to wait on that one?
No, well, you know what? I find the show offensive for a variety of reasons, including the training approach on it, so go for it.
You know, in this day and age, you know, I'm a woman. Well, I'll be middle-aged is no longer correct, because I'm 57. I don't know what that's the middle of. But a white, late middle, you know, I've got some, there's no question, boon and benefits from that, right? You know, I get, you know, I got pulled up to my registry off. I forgot to register my car this year. It should have been done in July. It's December. And the cop apologized and asked me if I would. Okay, in this day and age, when I say that sentence right now, I actually feel bad because I'm privileged. Okay, fine. So we have a television show that takes people with weight problems, puts them in clothes that show their bodies in the worst possible light, and then we have psychopaths berate them week in, week out, yelling at them, in their lives, and we call them the biggest losers, because they're not just losers. They're the most amazing losers in the historicity. I try to address that in the book. In the first chapter, I talk about this event. We were at Denison University for our discus camp. My daughters were little. And we got a lot of girls, real tall girls, real strong girls, and they're big. And this little cheerleader from this other camp walked up to one of our girls and said, "Are you guys like a fat something?" And it was a moment when I heard the story that just, it really did change my life. Just first off, that cheerleader, we'll give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, maybe she was just an idiot. You know, maybe she's just stupid. And God bless her if she is. But she could also just been cruel. And I have to, after being in education most of my career, I have to keep that door open, that she was just a horrible, awful person. But it doesn't matter, because the kind of story we had in America and in the States, anyway, I know that every single day. You know, if a woman walks in, if a woman walks into a bar and she's overweight, and she's wearing a dress tight, I guarantee someone in the bar is going to whisper to her friend, "I can't believe she wore that." Well, I think one of the things we try to do with Josh's book to address that and get people, you know, get people to realize that if you do want to change your body composition, there's some real appropriate ways to put, you know, some real intelligent, safe, long-term ways to do it. And you don't have to be screamed at. Don't have to be demeaned. You don't have to be fat. And the nice thing is that, you know, if you follow Jeff's idea, you know, in 2 or 3 years, you will have the body of Josh. Sadly, a lot of people don't want to hear thing I just said, where I said 2 or 3 years. But if it took you 40 to get to it, it's take your fears to turn it around too. So I think I just think the book's fabulous. I never book had exercises in it. You know, when I looked at the pictures and I looked at the explanations, I'm like, yeah, that's good though. Let's keep those. You know, the book actually changed my vision on a lot of things about what I want to write in the future.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, you know, the book is very good, and I really enjoyed reading it, and then Larice sent me the audio version with you and Josh, and I went, wow, this is so much better, because just the enthusiasm that Josh has when he talks is contagious. He just... And it's real, and it's just... And then you have you, who is very laid back in your reading, and it just... It's a nice contrast. I didn't reread the whole book, but I listened to part of one of your chapters and some of his stuff, because I'd read the whole book, and I went, wow, this it's a nice contrast, and Josh's enthusiasm is just is contagious. Yeah. He and you can tell he's real. He's not trying to sound like a cheerleader. He just is so real, and you can tell this kid loves what he does and cares about the people he's working with.
He absolutely does. And you're so true. His enthusiasm. So Josh has come out and spent time with me a few times. You know, he'll do a trip from California to back to Colorado. And he'll, you know, very often he'll stop in, train with us, and, you know, eat a few meals and, you know, hang out. And man, he is, I tell you, that is not an act. It's 24/7 and it's all good news. It's, I gotta tell you, I'm a sarcastic old fart, and I can be cruel. I really try to hold it in. But God, he does, the way he spoke on it is the way he is. He's, if he came down for breakfast and I said, do you want oatmeal and eggs? It would be like a puppy on Christmas. I mean, he'd lose his mind running around the house, you know? So enthusiastic. And he just, he gets along with everybody. And he really has some great insights. And I don't know when I became his friend. I think it's got something to do with a CrossFit thing. The only good thing I got at CrossFit was my friendships with Josh Hillis, Mark Twight, Rob Wolf. Oh, and there's a bunch of others, but that's the best thing for me. I got a chance to meet these guys that and girls that were just all in a good place at the same time. Of course, every single one of those people have been pushed away, which will tell you something. I'm not sure what it tells you, but it tells you something. But I've known Josh. It's got to be 10 years then, huh? 10, 11 years. And, how he cares about his clients and about what he does. Just it isn't. I'm going to use the word inspiring, and a few of you are going to go, blah, 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 inspiring. But it truly reminds you about what a lot of is in here. You know, if you come into the fitness industry for money, you're probably too stupid to own your own gym or write books. You know, you better come into the fitness industry for the same reason you go into teaching. You have this bizarre need inside yourself to help people. And Josh has that, the bizarre need.
Oh, Josh is bizarre. We had a very hard time staying on point in the interview. We really did, because he's the kind of guy you want to sit down over a beer or several beers and just sit and talk. I mean, he's if he wasn't in Colorado and I wasn't in Florida, I could see him become my new best buddy in no time. I really could. I mean, we just had the best conversation. I think we talked for like well over an hour, and I went, we need to cut this short, but it's like we seemed like we just started talking.
And that's great. Yeah.
I can only imagine how his clients feel. Because, I mean, you could have a crappy day and you're going into the gym and you know he's there and he's going to be enthusiastic and it's real. It's not put on. It's not, you know, because you're paying me 50, 60 bucks for the hour of my time. It's because I care about you. And, okay, you had a crappy day. Let's deal with your crappy day and let's turn it into a great workout somehow.
You know, he steals a lot of clients without trying, because, like you said, first off, other people see the success his clients are having, but it's also what you just said there. There's a communal nature to his coaching. There's a welcoming to his coaching that we don't often get. You know, you can get away. I'm not going to mention the coach because I don't like him, but there's a Division I football coach who's pretty good usually for 2 or 3 years out of school. And then really, it's always in your face, search for excellence, you're not working hard enough, I'll run you off. You know, that crap works until it doesn't, and then it stops.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do this whole boot camp thing, but let's be honest, I mean, how many people do you know have done boot camps straight for 3 years? Nobody. You couldn't. The French Foreign Legion couldn't. You know, they don't allow dropouts. It's crazy. You know, most of the people wake up one day about 2 years after these insane programs and go, I am so broken and destroyed for my own, for my grandchildren's sake, for my long-term sanity, I've got to do something else. And sadly, where do you go? I mean, where do you go? Because the fitness industry thrives on that kind of crap. And it's bull crap, you know? It doesn't work. It does work for a very tight amount of times. You know, if you're a football player, you can... My freshman year in football, Jefferson High School canceled their first game with us. And it really destroyed our season. And it's funny, why? It's because our football coaches said, hey guys, we got good news for you. Since they're not going to have a game, we're going to do another week of double sessions. Well, we never had a day off. We had double sessions for 3 weeks. By the time we first limped into our first game...
You were burnt.
Done. And the team... I think we started off probably 65, 70 kids. And by the time the season ended, we're probably down to 25. And it just quit. And it was just quit. I mean, and it was some people who could play the game. And it was just, and I tell you, there was a time where it was every day, every hour, do I want to still be here? And that was 3 weeks. I mean, what do these people think that they can do for 2 years? It's beyond me. Yeah. But in this book, it's the opposite, you know?
And I can definitely see one issue in Josh's benefit. A lot of times when you have male trainers with female clients, there's a hesitancy on a woman's part maybe to hire a male, and there's a little intimidation, a little discomfort. I can see Josh being just completely disarming. I can see no woman being intimidated or uncomfortable. I mean, just... I can't imagine anyone feeling uncomfortable with him.
I would think you're right. Let's make sure we separate this out. Josh has some gifts by his nature and his nurture to be open and caring, but at the same time, he's also put his intellect on how to repeat what he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's you got to be careful sometimes. When people see the way I coach discus and shot, very often they'll say, you know, well, I'm just going to do everything you do, which is fine. But then I have to tell them, well, you also need this tool too, and that tool is the ability to stick with this program, this idea, and stay with it. And so Josh, you know, by his, you know, just his demeanor, you know, has this ability to be welcoming, but at the same time, and I always talk about three things, Bill. Most people want three things out of a gym setting. Number one, I think I might have said this to you too, don't make me look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us want mastery at some level. We want to look good. Number two, at some level, we want community. We want some taste of community when we train. And the third thing is results. Now, it's interesting because I think that the company called Curves nailed it. They nailed 2 out of 3. You don't look stupid on those machines. And there was a wonderful community, all female, no boys at our club.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's welcome. The third thing, though, they missed. They didn't have results, which is why Curves is disappearing. You'll notice with like a lot of the yoga studios, they're like the yoga studios, CrossFit studios, you know, they're like lilies of the field. They bloom and they die, mm-hmm. you know. And you see them opening here, closing there, opening here, closing there. Very rarely do you meet someone who's been at the class 10 years. And I think the problem with that is that you start Bikram yoga. I mean, I cannot support the way the founder is with people, but you can. There's 26 moves. You can master that. Mm-hmm. There is a communal nature to it, but it's the results side that tends to be the issue with Bikram. You know, so I think when we look at a guy like Josh, you'll notice in the book, I mean, he strives for mastery in the movements. His nature is communal, and that's something I would like you. That would be an area we need to talk more on in the future is inventing. I call it intentional community, where you literally invent a community to support your performance, fat loss, hypertrophy goals. And of course, the third is results. I actually think that if you have mastery of movement and you have a community that supports you, no matter what you do, you're going to get results. How long, how far is up to the intelligence of the system.
That makes perfect sense. And you know, we're kind of going off on Josh on a face-to-face, and I guess that's kind of where I'm going, talking about how he must be with his in-person clients. But going back to the book, which is really where I wanted to be, but as usual, I'm going off on a tangent. The book is just laid out, as you said, so simply and so logically. It's a plug-and-play. It's follow steps. Do this, do this, do this. And like you said, the most important thing, he just harps on it, is shop, prep, plan.
Yeah.
That's your most important workout. And I have to laugh, but I can see the image, you know, what you were saying about the headbanging or the intense heavy metal. I can see a visual of, you know, somebody walking through the supermarket with AC/DC blasting, picking up their lettuce and their broccoli and their chicken breasts. And
exactly.
But that's where the focus really has to be. People, use an email that I got this morning. I don't really know where this gentleman found me, but he asked me about sending me his family, 4 women, to train a couple times a week for 3 weeks when they came to Florida. I said, that's great. What is the goal? Fat loss. I said, well, we need to talk about setting up food journals and a bunch of other things because it's really much more about the nutrition. And he didn't grasp it. He said, well, I'm going to be there for 3 weeks. I want you to train them a couple times a week. I said, that's great, but that's not going to get you what you want. And I said, I want you to start with the food journals and so on. And he just couldn't grasp it, but it's just laid out so clearly. And you know, Josh has a very simple... One thing I like about what he's doing is he's not making it mysterious. A lot of people in this industry, as you know, like to make things mysterious and more complicated so they can justify the fee and so they can justify keeping you thinking there's more secrets.
And Bill, do you know my thing called problems versus mysteries?
I don't think I've read that anywhere.
Okay, well, a problem is something with enough time, energy, and effort we can solve.
Absolutely.
If I take my car keys and throw them in the garbage, and then the garbage truck comes and he puts it in the landfill. If for some reason we thought we needed those car keys back enough, and I called the president, he gave us $1 trillion, and we have 2 million volunteers, plus, and they're all paid and all fed, we could go through the dumpster, the landfill, and find those keys. Because losing your keys is a problem. A mystery is something that doesn't necessarily have an answer. You know, I teach religious studies, and you know, most of that class is mysteries. But every single listener here understands the most basic one. Do you love somebody? And the bigger mystery, do they love you? Love can be a mystery. Now, it's funny because at lunch, I came to the conclusion, I'm not a good person. I came to the conclusion. All men need is grilled cheese sandwiches and sex, and we're happy. And we're like, you know, we're like dogs. So any of the ladies listening, just remember grilled cheese sandwiches and sex, and we're done. That's as complicated as we are. So with men, there's no real mystery, but with women, man, woo! I tell you, it could be a mystery. Here's a mystery for you. Why do women comment on what other women are wearing at a party? I've got all the NASA computers running on this question right now. You know that one from War Games. You know, all the lights are flickering right now. Why do women have to comment on what other women are wearing at the party?
Insecurity.
Was it called Whopper or something like that? Whopper's not done computing this one yet.
Okay.
In other words, what I think you're saying, and I agree with you, is that Josh has turned fat loss into a problem to solve. And if you give it some time and some energy and some resources, you can fix that problem. But if I tell you the only way to fix the problem is, and I agree, I have no problems with what I'm about to say, but probiotics, okay? Oh, you and so you start taking probiotics, and I say, well, you're taking the wrong kind. That's why you're still fat. And no matter what you eat, it's still the wrong kind of probiotic. Well, now we're turning into a bit of a mystery, aren't we? Or you need some magic substance, or there's some number out there, like these new books that came out a few months ago about this one author says that all you need for fat loss is Tabatas. So he recommends 5 Tabata sessions a week. Well, those are 4-minute sessions, and it's just like, when I was at the height of my lifting career, I did 1 or 2 Tabata front squat workouts a month. And that was to prepare myself for the last clean, to keep some energy for that last clean and jerk at weightlifting me. This guy's saying 5 times a week. You'd have to use a taser to get me to do that. You'd have to threaten my grandkids or my dog. There's no way I could do 5 serious Tabatas a week. And this guy's saying you do them 5 times a week. He's like, so what he's done, and if you fail the course, well, then you don't understand the mystery. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's not repeatable, it's not doable, it's not reasonable.
No, it's not. Not for any length of time, no. But again, it's you got to come up with something new and exciting if you want to sell the book.
Well, and sometimes I'll get knocked on the internet because I tend to say a lot of things, or especially early in an article, that are hyperbolic. And I do it on purpose because, no offense, here's what I'm going to tell you on every single thing I ever tell you. Ready? 4 parts. Stretch what's stiff, strengthen what is weak, strive for mastery, eat like an adult. That's my whole career. That's all I know, okay? That's it. There's no more. And yet, to write, I have a weekly column with Men's Health, and I write for Testosterone, and I write for this, and I write for that. For me to say that in a different way, I've got to have a little bit of hyperbole at the start of the paragraph to get you interested.
Yeah.
Because it's always going to be the same conclusion. stretch what is stiff. Oh, how did you come up with that? Bach. As the great mass episode,
There you go.
Yeah. So I think we all know basically it fitness, performance, this superlative performance. It's a problem. Now it is true there's geography and there is genetics, but for most of us we can move towards the side of improvement fairly easily if we just apply the thought process of problem solving. I have in my next book coming out, I have a little side chapter on troubleshooting. And the joke I make in there, and again, none of my jokes are funny, but, I just make them. There's a word in Japanese called old man joke, okay? And all my jokes are old man jokes, okay? But most people, when they do troubleshooting, are simply looking for trouble. And I use the example of a personal trainer. The worst personal trainer is the one who counts reps. The worst personal trainer is one who can't throw. Hold on, just a second.
Yep.
Hello? Come on in. I'm on an interview. Sorry, it's my daughter, Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
So this is my daughter, Lindsay. Come say hi to Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Lindsay. You got an awesome dad.
There you go.
Hi, Ashton.
Okay, no problem. Sorry. So, if all you have is a personal trainer who counts reps, 1, 2, 3, 4, just hire a kindergartner, or a first grader so they can practice.
I think I can do that on my phone.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll have Siri count.
The second worst is one who thinks to themselves halfway to a set, I'm being paid, and then they look for something to go wrong. You see it. I see people do it all. I see coaches do it. I see it in football. I see it in track and field all the time. Someone takes a discus throw, and then the coach will say, you lost the triple axis across the sagittal plane while you were dorsiflexing the right foot in the peel-off position.
What language is that?
I have no idea. I made it all up. But my point is, when I coach my athletes, sometimes I say, what am I doing wrong? And I'll be like, you're doing fine. You're the national champion. We're doing good, And then when I do work on a drill to fix something, then we go all in on fixing. If we do find trouble, then we go on in. We fix the trouble. But we don't just, sometimes I watch people who criticize or give movement concepts, movement points, for every single exercise. You know, strengthen your diaphragm, hold your core, tighten your traps, squeeze your glutes, hyper-delegate your outs. What? And the person's doing something ballistic, and your coach, they can't hear you. And so for me, troubleshooting is probably the biggest mistake most of us do as personal trainers. What we need to do, I think, is to stay big picture as much as we can. And again, I mean, like, if make shopping your hardest workout. Do the fundamental human movements, stretch what's stiff, seek mastery. I mean, not one thing that's in Josh's book or what we're saying is really that
revolutionary.
Yeah, but it's the truth, and the truth is really a hard thing to handle, especially when we get to the area of body composition. That's, for whatever reason, I mean, there's nothing more public and private than our body, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can, like me, I'm a liberal Catholic Democrat in Utah. I could walk into any mall in the state and no one knows my secret, okay? but if I wear a short sleeve shirt, there's an outside chance you can figure out that I've lifted weights, okay? And if I wear one of those shirts from the 70s where you show your belly, you know, those belly shirts, most people will get the idea that I probably need to shave a little bit closer around the midsection. But so when we talk to people about their body, we're hitting them on one of the most deepest relationships they have, their own body. Plus, and then we all see it at the same time. So it can be
delicate.
Yeah. And it's fine. Most of your clients think they want to do a boot camp. That's what most people want. They want you to come to me and they want to say, Dan, I want you to kick my ass. In fact, I heard it yesterday morning from somebody who's in the Navy and is very tip of the spear. And I kind of laughed and I said, dude, you need to work on your hip flexor stretch. That's what you need. You know, you need to do some TRX. You know how to work hard. What we need to do is fix and correct you to get you moving, you know, better. But most of your clients who are fat loss clients want to be beaten, like just beaten with sticks. And yet they might compensate 1 hour after the training session by gorging themselves at some place that serves questionable coffee and crappy bakery goods.
Sounds like we're reverting back to talking about The Biggest Loser again here.
Exactly.
And
there's the other problem. I mean, so what you've done is you put this line in the sand, and it's win or lose. So if you meet your body composition goals, you are better. You're a winner. You get the prize. And if you don't, you're a loser. That was my knock on the book, Fit or Fat. I thought the book had merit. I thought it had value. But the problem is that Covert Bailey put a line in the sand. You're fit or you're fat. You know, and in my lectures, I often talk about, you know, when I'm doing the Highland Games, I give up almost 100 pounds to some of my competitors. I mean, I'm a big guy. I'm always the biggest guy in the picture. But at a Highland Games, you think I'm a high school cheerleader, you know? And so when I do Highland Games, I don't mind my body weight goes up. I've got a counter of 56-pound weight.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then in my life, like when I got back from the Middle East, there's pictures of me. You know, I'm not fat at all. I'm razor thin. But I'm not fit either. I couldn't drink a beer without passing out. I barely could walk up a flight of stairs. I was not fit, and I was not fat. And so what happens, I think, in our industry is we get into this good or bad, or, you know, either or. Either or is the lowest level of theology. Either or is probably the worst way you want to go through life with the human population. I think there have been some people in history who are pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I gotta tell you, their neighbor might have loved them. You know, I tell you, you know, mows a good lawn. You know, So, I hate him. He's a bad guy, but I tell you, he mows a good lawn, my friend. You know, kept his walk shoveled. So you really got to be careful in life with that either or, because especially when it comes to affairs of the body, because then it doesn't fit at all.
No, it really doesn't, because as you said, fit or fat is not applicable. The guys you're competing against, some people would probably say some of these guys are fat, but they're strong and they're fit.
Yeah.
They're fit for what they do. And that's I've heard you talk that issue before in several places before. Healthy right. is one thing. Fit is a relative thing. It's are you fit for what you do?
For the task.
Yes.
And then there's also longevity. I mean, I've had a couple of concussions in my life that were really serious. And at 57, and I had a nice, I tell you one thing, yesterday's lunch was a lunch for the A-team. You really needed to sit tall in your chair. One of the best programming coaches in America was at lunch. The guy with a Super Bowl ring was with lunch. A guy from the tip of the spear there with the Navy was at lunch. I mean, that, you know, and then, so, I mean, at that table, you had to bring your A game, you know? And we're having this discussion because, you know, the Navy guy is getting concussed all the time by explosions. The guy who played in the NFL has concussions. I have concussions. Then we had a young guy, a younger guy, who didn't really play contact sports. And the three of us were talking like, oh, yeah, those brain issues, it's real. And, you know, the hit, the depression that you go through at times, the self-doubt and self-wallowing from a concussed brain, the hormone profile issues, which I didn't even realize. The NFL guy was talking about the pituitary gland and how these hits shut this poor thing down. And so that we're sitting there and it's like, wait, I paid for all my education by being an athlete, all of it. And I made a deal with the devil by doing it, that there's a good chance that I gave up a few years of my life. I might have given up some quality of life in my case. And in the other guy's case, maybe even years. And it was like one of those things where, so I might have gotten myself fit for this performance, but I also made a deal to cut back on my longevity. So when we talk about health, fitness, longevity, and then we throw performance, we circle performance into that fitness area, you know, ideally we should be in a situation that you never get a cavity in your mouth, because that would help your blood profiles for the rest of your life. So you should really start flossing early and often. You should always wear a seatbelt. You know, really, if you're going to do a sport with your head, you should wear a helmet. And all of a sudden, you get these really boring sets of rules. But the reason I even bring any of this up is that that's the third factor that we tend to forget. So you decide to take ephedrine, caffeine, and aspirin to get yourself ready for your 20-year high school reunion. Well, if you're female, you drive your kids crazy because you're a bitch all day long. If you're a male, you get erectile dysfunction because ephedrine is a vasodilator, I think it is. So you look like $1 million and your family hates you and you can't perform in the marital act. Well, you look good. But and then on the other end.
But
you
at
know,
what cost?
Yeah, on the other end, when you're popping your body full of stimulants, there's other, I'm sure it cuts into longevity somehow. I don't know how, but I'm sure when you race the engine too much all the time, something bad has to come off.
You're just wearing the parts out.
Yeah. So I think this is my favorite discussion of all bills, this one here, because it allows me, like, when I work, I coach at the college over here. I coach the throwers. And I really enjoy it. And sometimes they'll want to do more. And it's weird because I kind of have to hit them with my experience hammer. You know, my 57-year-old track coach hammer on the forehead and say, hey, 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 you know, hey, 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 hey. You know,
you've done enough.
You've done enough. You know, I want you to be super duper, you know, here, not super duper today. You know, or, you know, I made a joke with one of them today. He had a pretty strong kid. He front squatted 270 pounds plus 57 pounds of chains for two reps at 7:15 in the morning, where my gym was 12 degrees. And he wanted to keep going up, and I'm like, you know, that's pretty good for today. And they were, it was just funny because it was like, really? But I feel like going up. No, no. If it was 21 degrees, we'd go heavier. But when it's only 15, we go lighter. And we kind of laugh at it. It was like, holy cow, you're a stud. And we'll be fine. When it warms up in the spring, we will attack. We will attack. But not now. And that's where sometimes it's, I think, our job as the big kids to show up and remind people of the path a little bit.
Well, that goes back to the keep one or two reps in the tank and never go near a max. And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, listen, I've got to walk over into the and let the puppy go potty here, okay?
Absolutely.
So I'm still with you.
Okay, well.
Multitasking, my friend, multitasking.
Hey, that's difficult to do sometimes.
Yeah.
This is why I like talking with Dan. Today we had his dog, we had his daughter. It's real, and I won't edit all this stuff out. It just makes it more fun.
Thank you, appreciate that. Well, you know, it is funny.
The tapping you hear is Dan's dog's nails on, I guess, a tile or a wood floor.
Wood floor, and he's fired up for whatever reason. I'm going to have to send him out.
It's because it's 12 degrees. I mean, it's only 50 here, and my dogs have been driving me crazy for the last week because of that.
That's great.
You know, from 80 degrees to 50 degrees, they're happy. So we've gone off in a million tangents, gone completely away from the book. You were talking about your next book. When's that going to be out, and what's it about?
Well, I think I'm finished. I think I'm finished. Hold on one second.
Sure.
My friend, I was in Dublin, and we were having a good time with Tom Plummer. And I was telling about the book, and the original plan of the book title was Grade the Mirror. And then he goes, And then I said, well, and this is where the book title probably, Can You Go? And because that's the question I ask my performance athletes. If they say they've got some kind of injury or flu or whatever, it's not my job to be nice, especially on the day of competition. Mm-hmm. On the day of competition, I have to be, can you go? You got the flu? Okay, yeah, I competed with the flu. Took a second in the sectionals in Northern California with the flu, yeah? Can you go? And if they say no, we're done, we go home. If they say yes, I kindly tell them to shut up and get going. So Can You Go? It's a book about how I assess people. The system I use, so I talk about the quadrants again because I always think that's important. That's that thing I came up with, an easy strength to the impact of a strength coach for the sport you do.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is the more I looked at it, the more I realized the one called Quadrant 3 had two kinds of people in it. It had the majority of athletes, and it had everybody else. I mean, the whole rest of the world's population. So now I broke down Quadrant 3 into two parts, active athletes and everybody else. So Q3E squared and Q3A squared.
Okay.
I have a whole section on how, you know, the role of the strength coach with an active athlete. It's simple. You coach the fundamental human movements, you look for the gaps, and then you look to make sure it's standard. And that's really it. And then they do their sport, and that's kind of it. And then the assessment is, can you go? For everybody else, I have a 1-2-3-4 assessment that I do. Stand on one foot, there's two measurements, there's three questions, and then there's four tests, physical tests, you might take, though really, you really only need for most clients, one. With the answers to the basic questions, there's a Venn diagram that comes up. And in this Venn diagram, there are three big circles: body comp, mobility, and strength. And because there's three circles, it ends up in the Venn diagram having seven. You can be one of seven. So, for example, a one client needs mobility work. A seven client needs mobility, body comp, and strength work. There's a two, which is common for men. They need mobility work and body comp work. Four is common for women. And that would really, I mean, the answer to four is read Josh's book, to be frank. You need body comp work and you need strength. I mean, it's funny. It's funny. I guess I'm going to sit back one day and say, well, instead of me writing more, just read this book, you know. Mass Made Simple would be a real good way to deal with, well, there are not many of them, but there are people who are pure fives, need strength. Though Mass Made Simple would be a pretty good-sized sledgehammer to drive a tack into the wall. Help me put this tack in the wall. Here, it's in the wall now. And there's also
Still a wall there, though?
Yeah, there's no wall, but there's a tack in it. And then from there, I come up with what's called the five tools. And you already know the answer to what your stretch, what's tight, you know, strength and what's weak. Eat like an adult. And so what you do is once you've kind of assessed where a person is, then your job as the coach, this book will also be a series of workshops called the coach's book on the coach's course on coaching, and that will be the next day or two where I walk you through appropriate coaching models and techniques, and I'm very, very happy with this. So as I said, I mean, right there, there's a lot of cool things in there. I've got like 10 hints that work for everybody, everywhere, every time. Which is funny I even say that, but here's a quick one. Generally, it helps to work on volume before intensity. Now, everybody knows that, but we have to be, you know, little chubby Edna, who's, you know, 41 years old, wants to, I don't know, lose a few pounds for her reunion, and you put her on some intense training program. Yeah, Tabata's intense, high intensity interval training is intense. That's fine, but really you get just as much with her by having her go for a long walk and doing three sets of 10 and 8 or 9 different machine exercises. In fact, you'd probably go a lot farther because she wouldn't be so ripped up and destroyed. So that's the book. And I'm really, really like it a lot, you know, which is weird. That sentence sounds strange, but the fact that I like my own work is really weird. I can't stand listening to myself on audio. I won't even go near my DVDs. I can't stand them. I have a hard time reading my own work. That's why it's hard for me to proofread. Because I can't read it after I did it. So, but I'm going through this book, and it's like, yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. I wish I'd have known that 5 years ago. Because I've had to develop all this. My job in the last, 7 years is kind of reverse engineering all the stuff I picked up, you know, in my career and, you know, just from other coaches. What I'm trying to do is, this came from you see it in Easy Strength, you see it in Intervention when my interns and my assistants will ask me, why did you say that? Why did you change that? And I'll have to stop and go, holy cow, okay. You know, you say okay like 35 times as you just keep going. You start at the letter Z and, you know, C, okay, B, okay, A. Okay, I'm ready to start talking.
It's called a stalling technique.
Yeah, no, and then you start off, in the beginning, when the earth was a formless place. Because that's kind of the joke about when I used to teach sacred theology, sacred scripture. But whenever a student asked a question about theology and scripture, I'd always take them back to in the beginning. And that became kind of a standard joke with my students, because it was like, but if you don't understand that, you can't understand the question you asked here. You know, is it okay to eat a bagel? Ah, in the beginning. So you kind of have to, when you try to break something down for someone, when you tell an NFL guy we need to really do, we need to stretch your pecs, your biceps, your hip flexors, your hamstrings. And the guy, and then someone standing next to you says, why? And I say, well, because he sleeps with 9 pillows. Well, how do you know we should do that? Okay. Hold on. Okay, in the beginning, you know, and because that's how you, when you reverse engineer an insight, it's wonderful. But boy, what a process. What a process. Sometimes a simple question will end up with me writing a whole book on it. And that was intervention. You know, that the whole intervention book was how I talked to one athlete this way and another athlete that way.
So if I'm getting what you're saying right, you always knew this worked, but now it's figuring out why it worked and explaining why it worked.
Or the process it took to come up with that answer.
Okay. Because I've known... Let's go back in time.
Okay.
Vince Gironda.
Yeah.
Remember him?
Sure, of course.
All right. Vince, I had the good fortune to talk to a few times, and Vince's stuff worked. He had no clue why it worked, but he knew it worked. And if you asked Vince what is the reasoning behind it, he'd get nasty. Just listen to me. It works. That was the end of it.
Right.
And I thought about it, and I thought, he doesn't know why it works, but he's done it enough times and seen it on enough people to know it works. So sometimes I think figuring out the why is the hard part.
So, see, and that would be fine, but let's be honest. How much has his work been translated into other, you know, other gyms, other trainers, other coaches using his work?
I see it stolen all the time. New and revolutionary techniques that various authorities have come up with that I remember reading about.
Oh, okay.
Years ago.
Okay, but you follow my point is that, you know, the 8 sets of 8, which I thought was a fascinating workout. Fascinating. Still do, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Still. Had some of my athletes back in the 90s do that after football season to kind of prepare themselves for track season.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, November, December. Oh, my gosh. That volume before intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Once we started throwing discus, it was like, coach, I feel pretty good. You know? Yeah, you look good, too. Congrats for that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have to do is when we start, now that weightlifting, strength training, conditioning has become so saturated into every sport, we now have to know that doing a powerlifting program for, say, long-distance cyclists isn't a good idea, okay?
Right.
You're gonna back squat max chains and bands 3 days a week. You're going to work on, wait a second, Dan, what you just said is a pretty good idea. Right. So why can't a long-distance cyclist do it? Okay, you hear that question?
Yep.
Have to be able to go backwards and tell them, okay, and have some kind of system to walk them
mm-hmm.
from question into why a great training program, Westside, 531, they're all, I mean, there's not them. I don't often see terrible strength training programs. I mean, sometimes there's some stupid stuff because they try to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when you take that and then try to apply it to the sport performance athlete, it doesn't work. Why? Well, my job in the last few years is to do the step back. You have an adult male who doesn't sleep very well at night because of, let's just say he's over fat and he's immobile. He might want to get back into shape by going for a run and doing bench press and curls. All three of those things are fine, except it's going to make him less mobile, and it's going to make him sleep less, which is going to make him fatter. So he decides to fight it by running more, and benching more, and curling more. And he gets stiffer and stiffer and stiffer and stiffer, and can't sleep. Well, and all of a sudden his back goes out and he can't do anything. There was, what we should have had him do was stretch what needed to be stretched and find some kind of exercise that allowed him to open up a little bit. I mean, I'm just spitballing here, but like, maybe for this guy, the way in my mind, looking at this person in my head, the concept to rower might have been, and I don't want you to go fast, I want you to go, you know, whatever you say from there, I don't care. But you have to be able to, look at the question. The question is, how do I improve this sport? How do I deal with this overfat person? How do I deal with this immobile person? And answer the question beautifully, simply, and logically. And that's been my work for the last couple of years.
Summarizing what you just said, it pretty much sounds like right tool for right job.
It's exactly right. You know, my friend Pavel always says, if all you have is a hammer, the whole world is a nail. And I think what we've gotten into is that a lot of us just take the hammer and just, okay, if you're a power lifter, everyone power lifts, you're an Olympic lifter, everyone Olympic lifts, you're a bodybuilder, everyone bodybuilds. And you can't do that. You can't, it doesn't work. It funny thing is, it actually does work until it doesn't, and then it's disastrous. So we have to be smart enough, then we have to be at the big kids' table and be able to get, if the person needs mobility, we do mobility. And so we're gonna pick strength exercises that encourage mobility. We're also gonna stretch certain things between sets. So if you need mobility, you're gonna be doing one-arm bench presses, one-arm TRX rows, and in between sets, you're gonna stretch your pecs and your chest. If you need mobility, I might have you sit at the bottom of a goblet squat and then do a hip flexor stretch, because that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old statement in everyone. It's a cliche, but you know, my job is to get you what you need to do, not what you want to do.
It's easy to get you to do what you want to do.
My throwers always ask me why I don't put bench press and curls, my nails, into their training program. Because you know what? I know they're going to bench press. I have no question about it. I say, when you got time to do it, oh, okay. And I know they're going to bench. with most females, I don't need to put core training in or crazy ab work. I mean, the last thing they need is more of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're always going to be trying to work. You know, and it's funny because they'll just finish a set of snatches and they'll say, I need to do some core work. It's like, well, okay. You might have just done some, but
it's a possibility.
There's farmer carrying dragging the sled. By the way, I heard a really interesting thing yesterday. Have all the desserts you want, but you have to make them all from scratch.
I like that.
Yeah, my friend Andrew told me that. And I thought that. So, for example, I remember years ago the girls, I can't remember if Kellyanne, Lindsay, or just they had to make ice cream in a chemistry class.
Okay.
Well, to make ice cream in a chemistry class takes a long time, and you end up with maybe a scoop of ice cream. And the work involved probably burns 5,000 calories to get, 30 calories back. And it's just funny. I thought that was such a, yeah. You don't have to worry about kids eating their dessert. They're going to take care of business on that.
Yeah.
As mom and dad, we got to shovel the vegetables at them. Yeah. But it's funny because that's exactly, I guess, the metaphor for what we need in the weight room and in the training. It's what we need to do, not what we want to do. You can see it at high school football practices. You know, if you circled what the kids wanted to do, they're gonna do certain things on their own. Schedule that. Put that in pre-practice. Put it at the end of practice. What we need to work on is, tackling. We need to work on special teams. All the non-sexy stuff that wins games.
Yeah, it's not difficult to get people to do the fun stuff. If it was about the fun stuff, you'd be out of a job.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we've run this longer than I expected to, because you've been in a good talkative mood and the world hasn't gotten in the way, so...
As much, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we've talked about the book, we've talked about your upcoming book, we both have established to the world that we're like two of Josh's biggest fans, and just to wrap it up, is there anything other than Merry Christmas you'd like to say to everybody?
Oh, yeah, the best of the holiday blessings to everybody, sure, absolutely. As always, Bill, if I can be of service, let me know. I like to, yesterday afternoon, one of the guys said to me, he goes, is this what you do for a living? And I said, yeah. He goes, how do I get in on this? I said, yeah,
It's a hell of a racket, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's funny because it was a compliment in a way, because, you know, I really paid my dues, you know, a long, long time, and, you know, now, I mean, things are going really well. I mean, there's not an area of my life that isn't amazing, from the finances to the social calendar to the, you know, to the travel schedule. So I want people to remember that, you know, I'm here, I really need to give back a lot. So I'm here to help. Dan@danjohn.net. Always glad to answer questions.
I'm going to just end it right there. Merry Christmas, everybody.